Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Man, it's cold out.
Wow. Amen to that.
Ooh, and it's just going to get colder.
Thanks for reminding me.
Wow. Great to be with you today here in the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, where it's 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Need another piece of cold air for the Sunbury Motors Studio, do you?
Ooh, man, I'll tell you, it's brutal. Now, we have a really good show on tap for today. Really good show. Because Scott Radisic from Populous is going to join us today. Now, Scott, let's just give you a little background on Scott. As Kevin put together an entire portfolio on him. Okay, I'll just do it off the top of my head. Scott.
You do that anyway, so.
Scott came here 1980 to play football at Penn State. He was on the 1982 national championship team. He wasn't just on the 1982 national championship team. He was one of the key players defensively on the 1982 national championship team. Ran an interception back 85 yards for a touchdown at West Virginia. He was a junior on that team. And then his senior year was 83. Joe Paterno often remarked about, you know, a guy like Radisic when it came to classroom time, how important it was. He said because he has a difficult major in engineering and architecture that needs more time. And he talked about that often when it came to Scott as to what he did and in terms of his academics. Scott then went on and played in the NFL for years. He had a long career in the NFL. He played mostly with the Buffalo Bills and some with the Indianapolis Colts. But primarily, he was with the Bills. And, of course, his brother Keith Radisic also played here at Penn State as well. But you look at what he did professionally. I mean, he had a really good career. I mean, he was a second-round pick of the Bills in 84. He's the 34th overall player taken in the draft. And I think he was actually taken by Kansas City with the Chiefs. Then he played there. Then he played with the Bills for a couple of years, and which included going to the Super Bowl. And he played with the Indianapolis Colts. He actually spent more time with Indianapolis than any other team that he was with. But you're talking about a guy who had a 12-year NFL career. 12-year NFL career. He is now the senior principal at Populous, the architectural practice specializing in sports facilities and convention centers. I mean, he is, again, the senior principal in it. And I mean, this is a guy that took his education here at Penn State and where he had a goal in mind as to what he wanted to do. And I think obviously he went back to Kansas City because he was drafted by the Chiefs in the second round. Then he went to the Bills, and then he was with the Colts. But Scott then got involved at HOK. And HOK has been renamed Populous. They're the ones doing the entire facility review here at Penn State. And in the end, they'll be the group that will put together the concept for it, and then they'll build it. Let me give you a primary HOK stadium, ballpark that everybody knows. All right? HOK, now Populous, did Camden Yards. But they've also done the renovation of Kyle Field. They built from the ground up McLean Stadium at Baylor. Scott worked on both of those projects. He also worked on Glendale, where they hit a button and the field rolls in.
I've seen that. That's really cool.
Well, that's not as cool as what they're doing at Tottenham. What they're doing in Glendale is child's play compared to Tottenham. Tottenham is where the NFL has openly stated they want to put games in Tottenham every year as their NFL stadium. They're trying to set the table eventually to have Tottenham be the site for an NFL team, if it is feasible. I know you're not crazy about it. You can confirm that.
I'm not sure if I'm crazy about it or not. I'd have to analyze it further.
What about London? I thought you said
Oh, I wasn't sure what the name of the field was that they were going to use. That's why I was confused.
Tottenham's in London.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about that at all, because I think logistically that's going to be a nightmare to try and play, if you're a West Coast team, to play a game in London, unless you have a bye week before it and a bye week after.
You probably were thinking they're going to play in Wembley Stadium.
I was thinking Wembley, actually.
Yeah, it's not. Tottenham is the one that they're targeting, and they're doing an entire renovation of Tottenham. Now, listen to this when it comes to the field. Okay. Obviously, English Premier League is played on natural grass, right?
Correct.
Correct. There's no field turf in the EPL. So what they're going to do, and Scott is only on the periphery of this project, but which we'll get into a little bit later. They're going to have a grass surface, and underneath the grass surface is field turf.
Wow, that's weird.
Hold on.
Okay.
They're separated. Okay, so the grass is not on top of the field turf. It just is on a different level than the field turf.
Right, so you move one out, you raise another one up, and then you slide it underneath or something to that effect.
It's not quite how it works. Not quite.
Why do I feel like this is Rocky IV, where Apollo Creed's coming out from underneath the stage or whatever it was?
Right, you hit a button, and in sections it peels out.
Wait! What do you mean it peels out?
It goes out in sections. They take it out in sections, and the field turf rises to the and becomes the primary turf. And then they're going to put grow lamps on the grass while the field turf's being used.
So
now how wild is that?
Hold on. Rewind here a little bit. You're telling me the grass turf. I'm sorry. Yeah. Let me rephrase that so it's
which
not
is
confusing.
Done, which,
the grass
which is done which is done on trays.
Right.
All right. So it's done on trays. That's why you can do this.
Right. They're going to be their own separate sections, and they're going to roll away, come apart. However you want to do it. And then the turf field comes up. This slides underneath, and then they have grow lamps so that the grass doesn't die.
Right, but the grow lamps could probably only go 3 or 4 days.
I would think that, yeah. Now here's my other question. How do you do that without any seams?
Well, I announce games for a living. How do I know?
Fair. That's a fair answer. But don't. I mean, this sounds like a Penn State Agriculture Department I question right now.
Hey, it's just a remarkable thing. It really is. It's remarkable. If you think about it, it's like one time we were at Wisconsin, and they started doing jump at the end of the third quarter. and the entire press box is moving. And Jack Ham looks at me and he says, "Hey, Steve, are we safe up here?" And I said, "Geez, Jack, I don't know. I said, I'm an announcer, not an engineer. How do I know?"
Actually, I broadcast games from a condemned section of a stadium before, so that's nothing new to me.
And with that, it brings with us several one-liners and a commentary unto itself that we will avoid. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
And the green grass grew all around and around, and the green grass grew all around. And in this nest.
What?
And the green grass grew all around. That's just popped into my head as you were talking about the way this turf is going to look.
Even Sean Carey's disgusted with you. All right.
You never know what the bump music is going to be. It's whatever pops into my head when you're talking about something. And it just happened to be that song.
Fabulous. All right. Where's your memo today? No memo.
Well, it's hard to write a memo when your computer isn't working.
Okay. Well.
Answered that question, didn't it?
Yeah, well, I got to get to other stuff. Let's get to some other stuff. College football rules. They're going to experiment this year with a centralized location for conferences to check out calls in stadiums. They will still have on-site replay officials. I'm for this because it just gives an extra set of eyes and maybe some different angles for them to look at, whether it's in Chicago, Charlotte, Birmingham, whatever it happens to be, whatever they want to put the, you know, Walnut Creek, whatever they decide to do with the, those are where the conference offices are, by the way. That's why I mentioned those specifically. And an extra set of eyes. I'll give you an example. Where could this pay a dividend? It could pay a dividend on the Von Bell play, for example, where they had replay problems here in the stadium, but they would have a view of it in Chicago. They'd also have some of their better replay officials on hand to take a look at these things, but they're still the bottom line is it'll start with the stadium person, and if they need assistance, they've got a backup with a centralized group. They're going to experiment with it in 2016. As long as they keep the replay official on hand in the stadium, I'm all for this because I still think you have to have a feel for what's going on around you. I think something like this could have helped with the Duke-Miami game as an example. They're going to take a look at targeting when it comes to launching oneself. I agree with that, but I will say in no uncertain terms so people understand, I think replay officials, when it comes to targeting, stink. They have no idea what a tackle is, what a form tackle is, and they really don't know what targeting is. Every game I look at where they're talking about, well, he's been tossed out for targeting, it's been confirmed by the replay booth, and you're looking around saying, what in the heck are you talking about? Zettel was able to stay in the Michigan game. He was able to stay in. The replay official did a good job on that one. But I'm looking, for example, at the Holiday Bowl where Nebraska's playing USC. The Gary kid got tossed out of the game. Okay? Was he high on the tackle? Yes. But he went up, right? No helmet to helmet, hit the shoulder pad with his helmet, form tackle, brought him down. Okay. And he got thrown out of the game for targeting. I'm sorry, the replay official should not take a check that night because they literally did not do their job.
That's what I was going to say. And they, even replayed that one.
I'm saying, but that's the reason. All targeting is replayed. All of it
is. Right. And they still, okay, that's the thing that amazes me. They still got it wrong.
They get most of them wrong. Okay, the kid in the Michigan game, the linebacker, got pushed by the Michigan State kid into the other Michigan State kid. Call for targeting. Okay. They review it. He obviously gets pushed. Tossed. What? What are you watching? Why bother going upstairs if you're just not going to take the time to understand what you're seeing? And that part, they've got to do a better job of it, because I think college football replay officials have not, for the most part, done a good job of identifying actually what targeting is. Now, they're going to be able to look at launching. I agree with that. And also on using the crown of the helmet, I agree with that. But they've got to do a better job of looking at that replay and figuring out whether it was targeting or not. And I don't think they've done a very good job at all on what targeting really is. I know it's for the safety of the game. I am all for it. I understand the safety of the game. I'm all for safety of the game. But you also have to be smart as to how you mete out justice, and I think they have not done a good job in that regard. The Von Bell play would have been one that they would have gone back to a central location to look at, and I think they would have overturned it because of the problems they had here at Beaver Stadium. That same game, there was also a play where the play clock ran out, then they kicked a field goal. It should have been delay of game. That is not a reviewable play. Bill Corello and I have talked about this. He wants it to be reviewable, but it still has not passed muster yet nationally. They're also going to allow coaches to have tablets in the booth and tablets in the locker room, but not on the sideline. Now, there's some reasons behind it. One is connectivity. I understand that. Not every stadium is great with Wi-Fi. I think a lot of people struggle with Wi-Fi in Beaver Stadium, despite the fact they've done a lot of different things to change it. They put a cell tower outside of Medler Field, Lebron Park, on a truck. I mean, all sorts of things. They've struggled with it. So they're not going to allow it on the sideline. But the other reason they cited was cost. Okay, so let me understand now. Michigan could go for a week for spring practice on IMG. Who cares about the cost? But I can't have a tablet on the sideline because of cost? Who's running this show?
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
It's so great to have you with us. Today, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, Sunbury Motors 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. This day in sports history, then Greg Pickle from PennLive.com and the Patriot News. And then the next hour, Scott Radisic from Populous. They're the ones doing the facility review at Penn State. Have a lot to talk to him about. He's going to join me here live in the Sunbury Motor Studio. This day in sports history, the NHL Players Association formed in New York City in 1957. Ted Lindsay of the Detroit Red Wings was elected the first president. Willie Mays, highest paid player in baseball in 1966 when he signed a two-year contract with the Giants, $130,000 a year. I think the major league minimum now is $600,000. 1968, Madison Square Garden, the one that Penn State just played in, officially opened in New York. It is the fourth garden. The building is in great shape. The $1 billion renovation. I thought they did a really nice job with it. I was very impressed. And I've done a lot of games in Madison Square Garden. Done a lot of games, period. You'll find out next week how many. 1971, Jean Beliveau, the Montreal Canadiens, scored his 500th career goal. 1973, the Philadelphia 76ers lost their 20th game in a row. They went 9-72 that year. Was it 9-73? It went 9-73. Kevin Lockery was the coach. 1986, the Super Bowl shuffle by the Chicago Bears shuffling crew was certified gold. And in 1990 in Tokyo, Buster Douglas knocked out Mike Tyson in the 10th round to win the heavyweight boxing championship. Buster Douglas was at the Penn State-Ohio State basketball game 2 weeks ago. Not in shape. We're not here to start no trouble. We're just here to do the Super Bowl shuffle. Well, they call me sweetness, and I like the dance. And the show dies. Okay, Scott Radisic, a populist, next hour.
Love the Super Bowl shuffle.
Oh, yeah. I've only seen 10 seconds of it here and 10 seconds of it there.
No, you're missing a part of pop culture history there. Sorry.
The 1985 Chicago Bears, one-hit wonders.
That is true, though.
Both in music and on the field.
Also true.
Hard to win one, but I'm just saying, they get a lot. I'll tell you, I watched the 85 Bears 30 for 30. It was sad seeing Buddy Ryan in a wheelchair and how emotional Mike Singletary was about it. Very, very touching. Very touching. All right. Talked about the rules. Like I said, replay officials don't do a great job in targeting at all. Now they're going to give them responsibility seeing they launch, which I think that they should. I think part of targeting is the act of launching yourself at somebody. So now you're going to be able to look at that. They're going to centralize replay as an experiment to supplement the replay booth in the stadium. I agree with that. And a couple of other subtle rules they put in as well. There's three different rules changes, which are important but not off the chart, a big deal. Greg Pickle joins us, PennLive.com, Patriot News. Greg, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Steve, it's always good to be here. I'm not sure if I'm as fired up as you are today, but I'm going to give it a shot.
Well, I mean, the targeting thing, how many games have you watched where you said to yourself, okay, it's not targeting, move on?
Well, you know, that's absolutely right. And the other thing that sort of made me laugh when I was reading the stories about that today as well is, you know, you go back to that, you know, obviously the infamous now Ohio State, Penn State game where the review didn't work because of technology, and they really haven't done anything to address that potential issue, but they're adding things that, you know, that don't necessarily help, you know, get the call correct, as we've seen time and time again. Like, I'm all for, you know, additional ways to sort of monitor player safety, but I think you're right that these guys, you know, think they see something and they don't always, you know, see it correctly, and a lot of games can be impacted by that. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that rule is used going forward. And as for the technology stuff, you know, I don't know what I'm more excited for, the first controversy over a targeting call made by the replay official or the first team to cite their tablets going out as a reason they lost. It'll be a good race to see which one it is.
Well, I think they should be allowed to have tablets on the sideline like they do in the NFL anyway. Now, obviously, there's a cost because, you know, I'm going to assume that the Microsoft Surfaces, every time I look at them in an NFL game, it looks to me like they're wireless.
Right. Yeah, it appears that way. And, yeah, I think that'd be fine to have them on the sidelines as well. I mean, we're sort of just getting to that point, you know, across the sport anyway, so you might as well just take that step at the college level as well.
Recruiting-wise, now one cycle's over with Greg. Next cycle, you and I both know the next cycle began a year ago, 2 years ago. When is junior day for Penn State, and what have you heard about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because a lot of people do say, oh, well, now it's time to focus on the class of 2017. And really, you know, that's obviously been going on for a very long time. Penn State has two commits in that class already, a quarterback out of Ohio and a linebacker out of Virginia. But, you know, as for the junior day, that's become an interesting thing, too. You know, when I started covering recruiting about 4 years ago now, you know, junior day, there was always one, maybe a second one. There's always one big one. And anymore, Steve, you know, it's turned into whatever winter weekends kids want to visit, they come. And whether they coin them as junior days, whether they coin them as visit weekends, whether they coin them as just a bunch of kids making a stop at campus. I mean, it's not. So, I mean, they try and do one big one every year. I think every school does. But anymore, it's just whenever you can get kids on campus, you get them. And if they can make your, you know, if there's one day where there's more kids there in terms of the actual number than normal, then maybe that's your quote unquote junior day. But at the end of the day, you know, they'll have, you know, different sets of groups come in between now and the time spring practice starts, and then more when spring practice starts. So, you know, when you start looking around, you know, the kids I've talked to, they said that they're aiming for their last weekend in February. So the end of the month is probably going to be your quote unquote junior day with the biggest, you know, the biggest number of players there. But really anymore, you know, you just want to get kids to campus whenever they can come. If it's a weekday, great. If it's a weekend, awesome. You know, there's not as much of an emphasis, it seems, on trying to, you know, shoehorn kids into a certain weekend as maybe there was when I started doing this 4 years ago.
Right. Jim Harbaugh, you mentioned spring practice. He'll take his team down during spring break. Absolutely legal. There's nothing about it that is in terms of within the rule book. He can absolutely do this. Now, they claim he's incredibly clever, but he didn't know about the rule till Tom Izzo took the Michigan State basketball team down to the Cotton Bowl. They went, oh, you can do that? Oh, okay. What do you think about it, and do you think the NCAA will then eventually step in and put a rule in about it?
Yeah, you know, there's a part of me that thinks it's a good idea. You know, obviously some of these kids probably wouldn't get to Florida if it wasn't for this trip and, you know, all that type of stuff. But it sort of bothers me that, you know, the one week with no academic responsibilities, the kids might be able to get home, see their family they haven't seen in a long time, and all that type of stuff is taken away by, you know, this decision to go to IMG Academy in Florida. To really, I mean, let's be honest, let's call it what it is. It's a recruiting trip. I mean, sure, they'll get a spring practice out of it, and sure, you know, they'll do what they normally do, but, you know, it's not like IMG Academy is offering them some sort of wonderful, you know, facility upgrade that Michigan doesn't already have. It's a recruiting trip. So, you know, you're taking current players to benefit future players, and then, you know, you're taking time away from the current players. So I'm not sure how I feel about that. You know, I would suspect there's a lot of schools that, you know, won't even really consider this. I mean, I guess we'll see if it's a recruiting boon. I mean, it's like anything else, Steve. If it's a recruiting boon for one school, everyone's going to start doing it. But, you know, the satellite camps are a good example where some schools have seen some success, some schools really haven't. And, you know, they maybe haven't called on as much as people thought they would when they first happened. So it's interesting. You know, do I think the NCAA will legislate it? Probably. You know, it depends how much heat they get and sort of which conference wins out between the Big Ten and the SEC. But it's certainly an interesting discussion to have on a number of different fronts.
Let's take this down to the financial side, because, for example, they're citing cost, for example, as to why, hey, look, maybe we shouldn't have tablets on the sidelines. Okay. All right. I can buy into that if that's the route you want to go. Michigan, obviously, is a school with great financial resources. They're in the same conference and in the same division, for example, with Rutgers. Rutgers, for example, is in the red, not just in terms of the uniforms, but in terms of where they are financially. It's one of the reasons why they joined the Big Ten. So in an issue of fairness, just two teams within the same division, one can financially do it, the other one probably shouldn't.
Right. And that's, I mean, there's so many issues like that, you know, whether it's, you know, your travel budget for recruiting, whether it's, you know, how you get your team from place A to place B. Do you have to bus? Do you have to fly? You know, there's so many things. I mean, obviously the Power Five and the Group of Five split helped address that some. But, you know, at the end of the day, there's always going to be programs like Michigan that, you know, they can call up. You know, I don't know how they're paying for this. It could be the athletic department. It could be boosters. I don't know. I haven't read that much into, you know, that part of the trip.
Right.
But,
yeah,
you know, that's the kind of school they could call up, you know, a number of boosters and say, hey, we need X amount of money to go to Florida for spring break, and they're going to get it by the end of the day. And not every school is able to do that. So I'd be interested to see how they're financing this trip. But, yeah, obviously, you know, that's one thing that would come up in terms of, you know, yeah, there's lots of schools out there that there's no way they could afford a trip like that. But I think, you know, at least one thing to point to would be there's a lot of instances besides this one in college football like that. But I'll be interested. It'll be very, you know, to see how they fund this trip and sort of if other schools try and use that model going forward. And again, it really comes down to recruiting success. But the problem is, how are you going to quantify? Let's say they get, you know, five players from IMG out of this trip. You know, I don't know, but let's say they do. Mm-hmm. Is it because Michigan has spring practice there, or is it because those kids just wanted to play at Michigan? It's hard to quantify, right. And that's a question a lot of schools are going to have to ask themselves. You know, if this thing works, was it because they went there, or was it because, you know, they had the opportunity to officially visit Michigan and pick Michigan? So I don't know. It's an interesting deal for sure.
Right. I mean, it's not as if Penn State hasn't had IMG players before. Michael O'Connor came here, the quarterback from IMG. Danny Morrissey came here and from IMG. So, I mean, they've all done that before. So Penn State's had certainly lines that have gone in there that have been successful in recruiting down the road. When you've talked to the recruits, have they indicated to you anything about the process that made them uncomfortable, that made you think, well, you know what, maybe I'd consider a rule dealing with this?
You mean in terms of how they were
recruited by everybody across the country? Is there anything along the way that made them uncomfortable in the process that you heard that was consistent?
Oh, that's a good question, Steve. No, not really. I mean, I think, you know, one of the biggest things, and I hear this more from parents than I do kids, is just that, you know, between direct messaging, text messaging, cell phone calls, home visits, school visits, emails, mail, actual, you know, letters in the mail. These kids, you know, especially the ones who are recruited by a ton of schools, just get, you know, completely blown up. And, you know, they'll come home from school, they'll have 25 coaches, you know, sending them emails or direct messages on social media. They'll have, you know, for example, Penn State send 107 letters to some kids. You know, I mean, they get so inundated with stuff that it really can be a distraction in terms of academics and what they're actually doing athletically, especially if they're a two- or three-sport athlete, because there's not really an off-season or a great time to deal with, you know, all that type of stuff. So, I mean, that's probably the biggest, you know, across-the-board complaint. Obviously, you hear kids, you know, that, you know, hear things about, you know, we hear a lot about negative recruiting anymore. Of course, it goes on. You know, kids hear, you know, a lot of different things, and sometimes they know the truth and sometimes they don't. And the time they have to spend tracking down the negative truth or the negative, you know, the negative facts given to them or negative, you know, supposed truth given to them actually annoys them with the school that provided them with that information, especially if that, you know, what they said ends up being false. So, you know, that can sometimes, you know, be a negative impact on the school trying to do it as much as it's a, you know, a boon for them trying to recruit against somebody. So those two things are really the two that you hear about most. You know, obviously there's kids that, you know, feel like that, you know, what other schools are doing in terms of stopping contact and, you know, all that type of stuff that sort of became prominent this year and at the end of the recruiting cycle was a problem. But, you know, for the most part, I think most of the kids that I interact with, which are generally Mid-Atlantic kids, were pretty pleased with how the recruiting process went. You know, I think some would prefer some changes, but for the most part, I think they're happy with the way it went.
Very good. All right. In college basketball, AAU is critical in the recruiting process. In fact, there will be some people that would tell you that the AAU coach actually has more influence with the player than probably the high school coach does. Does the Nike 7-on-7 idea have the potential to be college football's AAU?
You know, I'll say this. If I ever have to cover an AAU tournament for recruiting purposes, that'll be the last time I covered recruiting. basketball recruiting is so interesting to me. I know a lot of people that cover it and cover it well. I just don't know if I could get into that world. It just seems there's so many layers you have to peel back, and it's very interesting and sort of very bizarre at the same time. With football, you know, the problem with football is to get a 7-on-7 team together, unless you're in a big city like a Philadelphia or a Pittsburgh, you have to pull from a whole bunch of different areas to sort of build your team. And what ends up happening is a high school coach either ends up coaching it or, you know, you don't really, there's not, you know, with basketball, there's a lot of different people that are involved that either played the game previously or, you know, like coaching. You know, there's a whole bunch of, a slew of people that get involved that maybe don't have high school ties because a lot of that stuff is done away from the high school team. But with football, you almost always see, you know, a high school coach that ends up coaching a team. And so those guys, you know, kind of have the same type of influence because they're obviously a high school coach. And the guys that are not from their high school, you know, they don't generally interfere with, you know, that kid's head coach and the way he's helping with recruiting unless the kid or the head coach asks. So, no, I don't think it really has the potential to go down that road. I mean, it could it one day, you know, way down the road. Yeah, but in the near term, I don't think so. You know, I think a lot of kids that participate in those things have pretty good advisors. And that's not even the right word, but coaches, parents that are around them to help them through the decision-making process. So no, I don't think that's a fear that many have at this point anyway, going into, you know, another offseason of all that stuff.
Does it bear watching over the next 5 years to see if it does become that way?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, that's one of those deals where, you know, the bigger it gets, the more chance there is for something like that to happen. And, you know, the Nike camps right now are a pretty big deal in terms of, you know, the reach they have and all that type of stuff. But, you know, they also are, you know, individual in a lot of ways. So it's not, I mean, AAU basketball is, I mean, it is individual, but it's very much a, you know, a team concept, and these guys play in tournaments all over the country, where a lot of the 7-on-7 stuff is more localized, regionalized. You know, you don't have kids, for the most part. I mean, there's some instances you do, but you don't have kids going all over the place to, you know, play every single weekend. So I think that'll help in terms of staying away from that stuff. But, yeah, it's always something you have to keep an eye on as we move, you know, further along into kids wanting to expand, you know, their participation in a single sport outside of just high school.
Greg, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for your perspective. We appreciate it a lot.
All right, Steve, always good being with you. We'll talk to you soon.
Greg Pickle, PennLive.com, and the Patriot News. 5 Penn State players are going to be invited to the Combine in Indianapolis. Christian Hackenberg, Austin Johnson, Anthony Zettel, Carl Nassib, and Jordan Lucas. All have been invited to the 2016 NFL Combine. Scott Radisic, next hour on Beaver Stadium, as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Oh, boy. Right about now, I probably would like to go over the Route 61 bridge and just jump after hearing that. All right. So, yeah. Are you going to keep playing that all day?
No, that was it. I'm good now.
Oh, thank goodness. Oh, good. You get that out of your system?
Yeah, I did. I got it out of my system.
Whew, that's good. I can breathe again. Scott Radisic next hour from Populous, formerly HOK. They're doing the complete facility review at Penn State, including Beaver Stadium. That's the emotional one there. Now, they also looked at Pegula. That site review took about as long as the North Carolina investigation should have taken.
Yeah, 3.2 seconds. Yeah, that's good. We're good.
Kind of walked around and said, man, this is some place. I told you, I did a BTN game with a guy from the who played in the NHL for years. Why? He's walking around the bottom area where the weight room is, the hot tub, the cold tub. He says, there's only one place in the NHL that has all this. He says, is Toronto. He says, nobody else has all this. He said, this is college hockey?